Okay, so I got an update on the second question, which is interesting, and I think I'd like to ask you to respond to this. It says, also, are vet techs trained to spot abuse?
They are. You know, we have classes where we talk about that. We talk about how to handle questions like that. We give them resources on where they can go for support on those kinds of things. So we work very closely with animal services. They're actually located right next to our facility. So we bring them in for conversations like that as well. So
Okay, cool.
Unfortunately, we do see that in our profession.
Yeah.
One of our graduates is running a rescue in Tampa, and she unfortunately sees quite a bit of that. So, but they are trained for that.
That's good. So they know what to do once they spot it. They know how to help both the animal, obviously, but also the human that's whatever issues may be going on at home or elsewhere. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Tricia Gorham.
Yes, Kirsten, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm good, but I have a very strange feeling about this vet tech.
About the veterinary technicians?
Yeah, I mean, it's so absurdium to me. It's really absurdium. They're in the veterinarian office, and there is a sufficient amount of veterinarians to teach them and monitor them how to do a thing. And now it's one way to circulate money from the people who work 40, 50, 60 hours sometimes just to make the ends meet. And then they want them to go to school for 2 or 3 years to become a technician. That is so absurdium. To me, it's really absurdium. This is a passionate work that they do, and they have to go to college to become passionate. That is so absurd.
Okay, well, I'll allow Tricia to respond. I'm just going to say, I'm not sure where the absurd part comes in. We're talking about medical treatment.
The lady was mentioning something about, they have to learn how to be compassionate. Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm not sure about that part, but I think the fundamental thing that she has emphasized and drawn parallels to other professions, dentistry, medical profession, et cetera, is you want training.
The division of the medical field is so expendable, and it is so capitalized.
Okay.
And to the point where it's like, okay, now we have to have the veterinarian technician, the compassionate one.
I don't remember her saying that, but here's the thing. I would think people wouldn't go into that field if they weren't inherently compassionate to begin with, but I could be wrong.
Exactly.
But anyway, I'm gonna allow Tricia to respond, and then we're going to move along, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you.
Right. So our students are compassionate when they come to us. That's not something we have to teach them. This profession just lends itself to compassionate people. So what we're adding to those compassionate people is the medical background and the medical knowledge to support that nursing care and to support the medical procedures that are happening in the veterinary hospital. We can't teach compassion. They have to come to us with compassion. And all of our students come to us with that. So we're very fortunate in this profession that they do have that.
Yeah. And if anything, I would think back to the acquiring the 40 hours of observation. I would think one of the things that's important about that, and probably there are several things, is that people who are super compassionate and maybe a little bit sensitive, extra sensitive possibly, whatever, over the course of those 40 years, those 40 hours, either they say, wow, this is, I don't know that I can do this day in and day out, or it's like, okay, right. This is upsetting at times, but this is my life's work, really. It's meant to be. I love animals. And so again, I would think that compassionate or not compassionate, it's important to have the kind of the eye-opening experience of what it's like every day. So let me ask you this, Tricia. So do all students at the College of Veterinary Technology take all the same classes? In other words, is there a set of core classes? Then at a certain point, some students may peel off because they aspire to work with, let's say, wildlife or maybe exotic animals or something else that's kind of more of a specialty.
Yeah, no, they all take the same core classes. We offer different opportunities for those students that may want experience in different areas. So everyone takes the same core classes. The AVMA dictates our education and our skill set that we teach the students. We do offer our students some different opportunities. We had a dolphin medicine course that students were able to take down in the Keys. We're working on an exotics animal course up at White Oak Conservation Center in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
We had partnerships with Zoo Tampa, where students could go over there and do an internship and as a veterinary technician. So the students have different opportunities if they want to specialize in different areas of medicine and want to go a little bit deeper. We help to connect our students. We also run a study abroad program. We're actually getting ready to take a group of 20 students over to Zimbabwe
to
work on some animals over in in Zimbabwe, and we've done other study abroads. We've gone to Thailand to work with elephants, and we've done numerous sea turtle ones down in Costa Rica and over in Australia. So students all have that opportunity. If they're enrolled with us, they are able to get on those trips and go with us abroad.
Yeah, but it sounds like
COVID put a little dent in that, but we're back on track. We leave in 2 weeks for Zimbabwe. So.
Oh, that's great. And how long will you be there?
We'll be there for 2 weeks.
Nice. Very good. Again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Tricia Gorham, chair of the College of Veterinary Technology at St. Petersburg College. We're discussing work as a vet tech and especially learning to become one. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So, Tricia, you often hear about veterinarians contending with basically crushing debt because of student loans from vet school, maybe other factors too. What are the financial implications for vet techs? Tell me about like the cost of tuition, and let's say somebody was going to go on that Zimbabwe trip, like what that would maybe add to their sort of budgetary needs, and just are there scholarships, for example, and how does it all work?
The college is fully able to accept financial aid, so any student that is able to get financial aid can use that for our program. We take Bright Futures. We have lots of different scholarships throughout the college and in programs specific that students can apply for, and that will apply to the study abroad. But the great thing is that we are a community college. We're a state school, so we're pretty affordable. Our credit hour is about $110 a credit hour. So to complete the whole program, including book, tuition, lab fees, and things like that, it's under $10,000 for that two-year degree. So they don't typically come out with a huge overbearing debt like they would if they went to vet school. Typically, the vet student comes out with $100,000 to $200,000 debt when they graduate from vet school. And, you know, the pay range is not great in our profession. The people that are in our profession are not in there to make money. Veterinary technicians are about $40,000 a year. Veterinarians will start off at about $60,000 to $80,000 a year, and that's a medical doctor that's gone through exact same training that a human doctor that goes through, and they make, you know, three figures when they come out of school. So, you know, these people are compassionate coming into the profession. They know they're not going to make a ton of money. They know they're going to work long hours. So, these are the people you want to be working on your animals.
They're clearly committed and they're in it for the right reasons, because they're not certainly not making maybe a fortune compared to some other.
And that's your whole veterinary staff, from the front office staff to the technician's assistants to the technicians to the doctors. So it's everybody in that veterinary hospital is a compassionate group of people.
For sure. And so what other, just a little bit more on the salary part of it, what other factors account for sort of salary bumps? I mean, obviously experience, I'm sure additional years in the profession, of course. But what else is there, additional or specialized training? Like, let's say people have done program that you mentioned, like with exotic things or going to Zimbabwe or some other things. Are those things that accumulate where someone says, well, here's how this would bump your salary up from what you would be?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So once our AS students graduate, they can continue on to their bachelor's degree. The bachelor's degree gives them different opportunities. They could work beyond working in a small animal hospital, essentially. So they could be practice managers. They could be pharmaceutical sales representatives. They could go to a zoo. But beyond the bachelor's degree, there is vet tech specialties as well. And vet tech specialties will pay about a $10 pay differential. So a vet tech making $20 an hour would then make $30 an hour if they specialized. And there's lots of areas of specialization. They could specialize in behavior. They could specialize in anesthesia. There's dental specialties. There's emergency and critical care. So, for example, your Blue Pearl, which is one of our local veterinary specialty hospitals, they have several vet techs that are specialized in emergency and critical care. So those guys have additional training, additional continuing education requirements. They've had to do case studies. They've had to sit for another exam to become a specialist in emergency or critical care.
Yeah.
Behavior specialists is the same. So they have to take an intensive additional exam to become specialized. So they do have a different pay scale. So veterinary technicians have the opportunity to make more money, but it's more work for them. So they would have to get their bachelor's degree or get a VTS in one of those fields.
And so what percentage would you say of the people that pass through your program stop with the two-year credential and say, okay, I'm good to go, I can start working now, that's what I want to do, versus is people who say, okay, this is great, but I'm actually going to get the four-year degree and then kind of figure out what I'm going to do from there?
I would say 50% of them, I would say 75% of them initially stop.
Mm-hmm.
But then they come back to the program or they go on to get their BTS, or many of them do both. So, you know, they may work in the profession for a year or two, focus on taking that national exam, and then go on and get their specialty. So I would say a large number of veterinary technicians now are coming back to get their bachelor's degree or going the vet tech specialty route because there is that pay differential, because we're struggling with salaries in the profession. You know, we're struggling with keeping people in the profession because of the salaries and because of the lack of recognition by the state, honestly. So typically a veterinary technician will stay in the field about 5 years. So we're working hard to get that recognition by the state, to get the state to regulate technicians so they have that recognition and they have that understanding from the veterinarians of their skill level, and they are utilized properly as a veterinary technician. Some clinics don't utilize their veterinary technicians as they should or as they're fully trained to be utilized. So, you know, veterinary technicians may struggle a little bit with their profession, and we want to keep moving this profession forward so that we keep these great people that are well-trained in this profession taking care of pets.
All right, we have more callers. I'm not sure we have time for both, but we're going to take at least one right now. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Tricia Gorham.
Hey, great episode. I want to comment on the specialty programs for veterinary tech. I had a wonderful experience working at Lion Country Safari in West Palm Beach, and we had a wonderful set of lions, and one of the lions had developed a toothache, which caused a specialist to come in and remove the tooth from a lion, and it was amazing.
You mean just to observe the procedure, or?
Yeah, I worked there as a kind of an IT person, so I recorded it, videotaped it, and of course masked up and everything, but it was just absolutely spectacular to use that knowledge on large animals and having the opportunity to work in a zoo and just see that practice work. And there were just not only just the doctor there, but, you know, several vet techs. And our actual veterinarian at the zoo at Lion Country Safari was a female. She was superb. And it's amazing the field tech industry, you know, especially with large and a great industry for people to go.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Right. So just as an example, to follow up with that caller, is we have one of our graduates who graduated from our AS program, decided to come back and go through our BAS program. She is an ophthalmology vet tech specialist. She works for an ophthalmology practice in South Florida, and she travels around the country with her veterinarian performing procedures to give sight back to animals. And she's working on all species. She's working on lions and bears and a lot of work on sea lions and things like that. And she's monitoring the anesthesia on a sea lion so the veterinarian can perform this procedure to give the sight back to the sea lion. So it's really interesting the different areas that vet techs can go into with the knowledge that they learn in school.
That's great. Well, that might be the perfect point at which to leave this because we have just about reached the end of our time. We're speaking with Tricia Gorham from the College of Veterinary Technology at St. Petersburg College. You can go to spcollege.edu and search for the veterinary technology program to find out more about that and some of the stuff we've touched on and a lot of things we didn't get a chance to touch on, and we missed some of the emails and some of the calls, but we did as many as we could. Tricia, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. In a moment, I'll speak with Spencer Conover, who is the Assistant Director of Pasco County Animal Services, describing a monthly event they organize, which enables people on a first-come, first-served basis to drive through a specific location, getting their pet vaccinated and chipped at no charge. The May drive-through is already fully committed, but we'll hear details of the June version in just a moment so you can make your plans to participate. Right now, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with a piece recognizing that we're in Triple Crown season with the Preakness running on Saturday. Here's Jim Gaffigan with part of a piece called Horses in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
We are a country that loves to bet on horses. Every spring we track the three races of the Triple Crown, and every spring I always have the same thought. We're still doing this? Is Woodrow Wilson president? But people love the Triple Crown. The Kentucky Derby, where people bet on horses while they're dressed like characters from Gone with the Wind. It's like prom for gamblers. Do you like my hat? I'm living in my sister's garage. Because I have a debilitating gambling addiction. Shall we have another mint julep? They always announce the winner of each race on the news. You can always tell the horse was named by a guy on his eighth wife. The horse is always named like Viagra's Revenge. Alimony be damned. They show a picture of the winning horse on the news. They could show us a picture of any horse. We wouldn't know the difference. I don't know what we're supposed to do with that horse image. It's not like we're going to run into that horse in a bar. Excuse me, did you win the Kentucky Derby?
I did. I won the Kentucky Derby.
Now I'm in a bar enjoying a Heffenbeisen. There is the classic photo of the winning horse, right? They're always wearing that huge horseshoe wreath of flowers they stole from someone's gravesite. Standing next to the winning horse is the owner of the horse, who did not train the horse, did not ride the horse, and based on body language, has never really met the horse. There the owner stands, looking like they've never paid taxes. Sitting on top of the winning horse is the jockey, who's dressed like he just came from a local pride parade. They always interview the jockey expecting some insight. They're like, how'd you win? The jockey's like, I whipped the horse and it ran.
That was part of a piece called Horses in Today's Comedy Corner from Jim Gaffigan, taken from his album Quality Time. Now it's time to speak with Spencer Conover, Assistant Director of Pasco County Animal Services, about their drive-through vaccination and chip events they hold monthly, providing those services at no charge. This is Spencer Conover on Talking Animals on WMF. Good morning, Spencer.
Hey, good morning. How are you all doing today?
Really great. Really great. How about you?
I'm doing excellent. So happy to be on. Thank you so much for having us.
You bet. So when did Pasco County Animal Services begin offering these drive-through vaccination and chip events?
Well, this is actually a really, really interesting story. Back during...
I'll be the judge of that, Spencer.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
You definitely will.
Okay.
Question. We had a little stray dog come into our shelter. Really cute dog. Our standard stray hold here in Pasco County is 72 hours. So we hold him for 3 days in case anybody's looking for him. And after about 6 days, nobody had come looking for this little dog. And so we got him all spayed or neutered. I can't remember if it was a male or female, and vaccinated, microchipped, and we eventually adopted the little one out. After about 12 days, we had someone in the rescue community come forward and say, hey, I remember that stray dog you have. I found the owner. And unfortunately, the little dog had already found a new adopter. And so, rightfully so, some of the community was a little upset, but a great thing came out of it. A couple of our rescue groups got together and said, hey, this is a really crummy situation. How do we prevent this from happening in the future? And we all kind of collectively said, hey, if that dog came in with a microchip, it wouldn't even have come to the shelter. It would have went straight back to its owner. And it would have been right on the animal control truck and right back to the owner. And so a couple of the rescue groups got together and they wanted to be proactive about it and say they donated $500 apiece. Pasco County matched that. So we collected about $2,000. And we started hosting these free microchip clinics for the public. We've done five of them so far. We've done cats and dogs. We've done them on the east side of the county, the west side of the county, to make sure we get our whole population of the community. And we've microchipped over 500 dogs in our community over the last year and a half.
Wow.
Compound onto that, we've had some great partnerships, one of which is with Petco Love, national organization, and they've been donating vaccinations lately. And so our veterinarians got together and said, hey, let's do another microchip clinic for the community, but we want to go on top of that and do some vaccinations for them as well. And so we've got donated vaccinations, microchips that our community has helped paid for, and it's helped keep a lot of people with their pets, which is a huge goal of ours in the community. Is not necessarily adoption. It's preventing the animals from coming in at all and making sure they're staying in happy, healthy, loving homes.
For sure. Well, this sounds great. Well, as I mentioned, Nick, before you joined us, the May one coming up this weekend is already full. I'm sure these are super popular and those spaces probably get snapped up quickly. So before we run out of time, let's talk about the one that's being held in June and give us the details on that, if you would, Spencer.
Absolutely. Yeah, like you said, these get snatched up really, really quick. We put a little press release out kind of telling people, hey, keep an eye out. And I think within a couple of hours, all of the slots were filled. Now, luckily, keep an eye on our website. What's happened is, because it's a free event, we put it out there a little while ago. Some people are dropping off. You know, hey, I got to go out of town. Hey, my pet's actually not ready. It's kind of scared. Doesn't need to get a vaccination. Or I already got a microchip, which is great. We're getting those emails too. Hey, I went out early and I got a microchip on my own. So keep an eye. Some people are dropping out. But we try to do these as often as we can. We've held off a little bit. But we're doing another one June 25th out at the Dade City Senior Center. One of our things that we have here in Pasco County is our animal services is not under the sheriff's office, it's not under code enforcement, it's not under fire rescue. We're actually under public service. So we're in the same branch of the government as libraries and parks and recreation and senior services. And so we get to partner with a lot of these great facilities across the county to make sure we're hitting all of our great population of citizens, which is really cool. So the one on June 25th is going to be from 9 to noon at the Dade City Senior Center out in Dade City in Pasco County. We're really excited to go back to the east side of the county. We've been running some studies recently here, and we know that the highest percentage of animals that are coming to our shelter without identification are coming from that area. So by studying that and knowing that, we're really excited to get a microchip and vaccination clinic out in that area so we can get those pets chipped and licensed.
One quick question, and we might be nearing the end of our time here, Spencer, but this just came in by email, and I think I already know the answer, but I think someone's asking, is it only for people in that specific county?
Yeah, because absolutely. What a great question. Yes, unfortunately, you know, the folks that have donated to us, and both nationally and locally, are donating to Pasco Pets. One thing I will say about that is we have partnered with a lot of great local organizations regionally. We have a regional shelter organization, and because we're doing this, a lot of the other counties around us are also doing it. And so definitely reach out to your local municipality. If you live down in Tampa, Hillsborough County, they do these all the time as well. And so definitely reach out and look. These ones are just for our Pasco residents, but don't think it's not happening in your community. It probably is somewhere.
Right. You just have to look around. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So lastly, Spencer, is there any either number or website, anything else you might want to give for people that are hearing about this or driving around, may not be able to jot all the info down, and especially if they want to like get in on it and try to reserve a space?
Of course. Like you mentioned at the top, you know, we're doing these, we're doing one here on the west side of the county here in May, and we're doing another one in June. But like you said, we've already done five. We're trying to do these as often as we can, so there will be more. So keep an eye out. Our website is www.mypasco.net/PAS, Pasco Animal Services. Right on there, you can definitely make a reservation or an appointment for one of these. A flip side of that is we also host two vaccination clinics at our shelter every Tuesday and every Thursday, and they're extremely affordable. Microchip implants only $15, a rabies shot's only $10. And for $25, you can get all of that done right at our shelter, and appointments are available for that as well.
All right. Well, I think we got all the details, and everybody in Pasco County can jump on that and plan for that for June 25th in Dade City. So, Spencer, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I bet. Coming up on WNF, the music kicks back in with Scott Elliott from noon to 3 p.m. A glorious 3 hours of music, followed by Robin Huber with yet another 3 hours of music. And we just keep the music coming as we roll into our block of Latin programming and beyond. Meanwhile, on this show at the moment is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering, as I mentioned earlier, a pair of tickets to see Lainey Jones tonight at Hooch and Hive in Tampa. Again, celebrating the release of her wonderful new album, Stories Up High. Again, we had her on the show last week. Great animal person, raised with kangaroos and wallabies and stuff. But more to the point, great music. So the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song will get tickets to see Lainey Jones at Hooch and Hive tonight. That's Wednesday tonight, the 18th. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals on WMNF. Okay, we will take that guess off the air if you happen to be able to name that animal tune, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I invite you to join me next Wednesday for another edition of the show. Also invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are available there too, as well as other podcast platforms. Links to our social media pages and more. That's all at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. And we'll see you next Wednesday here at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.